Hello? Attendance check. Anybody here?
Eddie.
Hey, Eddie.
Hey, man.
Arthur has, he may have a time zone issue or a wristwatch problem. I'm not sure. He's called into the conference line a couple of times this morning, and every time he calls in to check it, I shoot him one back. He tied in at 11:31, and I shot him a response email, and then I sent him one letting him know that it was about 5 minutes out, so he should be here any time.
And how did you know that he had dialed in earlier? He called you?
Because as soon as somebody dials in when they hang up.
Okay.
Hello, this is Arthur Murray.
Hello, Arthur.
Yes.
How are you, sir? This is Michael. We've got Eddie on the line. Eddie, this is Arthur. Arthur, this is Eddie.
Hey,
Hello,
Arthur.
Eddie.
How are you doing?
Pretty good.
I know Michael said they said you dialed in a couple times today, a little bit early, huh?
Yes.
Damn time zones. I'm trying to avoid as much noise as I can, but I don't have any cell phone reception up at the client's office, so therefore I'm having to step outside and talk. So here, if it gets too noisy or you can't hear me, let me know, and I'll see if I can't find a little bit quieter spot. With that being said, I've reviewed your resume, but I don't have it in front of me. So why don't we do this? Why don't you take about 2 or 3 minutes and give me a high-level summary of some of the stuff that you've done in IT?
Okay. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you fine.
Okay. Basically, I mean, over the last 10 years, I mean, I've been doing a lot of different contract work, setting up devices, doing migrations, updating, you know, hardware, software, or just troubleshooting systems, various companies, maybe setting up accounts through Active Directory. And the last few projects basically were Apex systems, where I was doing like migrations, converting from Novell to Active Directory. And basically these were the migrations that I've basically been doing for the last.
You're getting a little jumbled on me, Arthur.
Okay.
You're just a little bit jumbled on me. So you said that I just want to summarize really quick. You said you've got some good migration experience over the last couple of projects, and the last project was what, Apex systems, right?
Yeah, it was actually the hospital systems here. It's three hospitals, St. Thomas Baptist and Middle Tennessee Medical Center. And those were the three migrations.
And where's that at?
This in Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh, Nashville,
Middle Tennessee Medical Center was a brand new facility. Basically, we just put everything new in that system and just added things as well.
So tell me a couple things. What did you do there? Some of your job duties and roles?
I was basically setting up the hardware. I mean, we set the switches. Installed the software, like the images, some of the medical applications that they were using.
Okay. What imaging software did you use?
They were using Ghost to deploy the images. And basically,
how did you stop multiple SID issues?
Well, we just basically, once we got the image on, we just renamed the system individually afterwards.
You did what?
We renamed the images, the systems, after we put the images on. I would take the server and build a server and just deploy like 20, anywhere from 15 to 20 systems, and then we would just rename the systems individually depending on the department that it was going.
Now, did you image them? Were they already a part? Did you join the domain before you imaged them?
No, the images were there. We did the images first. And then
before you join the domain, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So you made the image, and then you deployed it, and then you logged on to it, and then you joined the domains with them? Is that right?
Exactly.
Okay. Let me ask you this, and just more of a – I'm going to – based upon some of the questions that we – or the dialogue that goes back here, we'll probably spawn some questions here or there. And, again, this is normally I try to say this. This isn't really this isn't an interview like what you ordinarily think, like, hey, you know, here's a whole list of questions here and there. I'm really just gauging your experience level and your and trying to assess if you could be a valid asset, and if so, where. We have several different positions that's available, and so it's just really more of an assessment. So if I throw some things out there, don't get bothered if you don't know the answer, or if you do. Hopefully you do, but if you don't, it's no big deal either. I'm just trying to gauge your experience level. So whenever you're doing the images, do you know why you would not join the domain before you before you made the image? Do you know the technical reason behind it?
Well, I mean, that's just the reason being is because, I mean, the systems were based on, the images were based on certain systems as well. So,
right,
depending on where the department or where they were going, if we put the images on there and, you know, and join it to the system before you do that, I mean, it may not replicate and, you know, the policies may not.
Okay, so the technical answer is, so that's a business reason, which is fine and fantastic. We got to understand business reasons and business drivers during migration events as well. But the real technical, the underlying technical reason is once you join it to a domain, the RID FISMA role actually hands out a SID based upon the domain name to the server or to the workstation, to the client. That gets cached inside the registry and holds on, and that's actually what all the security ACLs are attached to. And when you image it, once the machine's already part of the domain, that SID, you're re-imaging that SID, so you can rename it all you want, but to Windows, it's still the same machine. So there's tools, I mean, there's ways around it. There's hacks into it, and there's utilities that you can run to actually alter and change those things. But that's the technical under the covers reasons why. But what you're saying is equally important, which is, you know, the business reason is, hey, we're deploying these things to different places. We want to make sure it's got the right software and whatnot on it. And that's fine. I'm just trying to see if you actually need the under the covers technical reason. And don't worry about it. Some people do, some people don't. It's really no big deal. Whenever you did the images there, what else did you do? Were you more hardware and image deployment?
Well, I did that as well. I mean, we did basically anything that they needed, like if there were accounts to set up or somebody needed to have a user maybe added to maybe the Active Directory, they would give their information, and I would put that in the system and set up the account for them.
Now, did you do that? When you say the system, was that a homegrown application? Or using the built-in Active Directory tools, like Active Directory users and computers?
Right, the Active Directory tools.
Okay. So you're familiar with how to use that?
Yes. I mean, I've done that. I mean, I've set up printers that way or any other, like edit the policies based on what they may need if they had maybe like, Blackberries or something like that. We would just basically add that information in the Active Directory as well.
Okay.
And that would just depend on the doctors or the nurses that, you know, that had those.
Yeah, being a hospital, then you probably relied heavily on group policy. Is that right? Had a lot of group policies out there? Okay.
Yeah.
Normally, the healthcare industry is like that, so that's not abnormal. So that's good then. So would you classify yourself as someone who could architect and design the group policies for an environment of that size, or somebody who can just maintain it?
I mean, I could design it as well. I mean, it just based on what the needs are. Yeah, I mean, I can do either.
So. Okay. But your primary role there, it sounds to me, was more maintaining it. Is that right? No, go ahead.
I said they had an IT that done it, but we were basically just getting them started and getting them going to where they can actually maintain it from there.
All right. Well, I'll ask you a couple questions surrounding that, too, then, really quick. What utility or tool, if any, would you use to see if a workstation is applying a group policy? So here's a scenario for you. I'm a help desk person. Somebody calls me up and says, hey, you know what? This isn't happening. I'm not getting such and such software. Me as a help desk person, I look to you, Arthur, and say, hey, look here, you guys are here doing the migration, and all of a sudden, you know, these guys are on the new domain, new forest, and they don't have access to this application. You need to fix this, Arthur. But you know, because the architect has told you that that is part of a group policy. How can you verify whether or not that group policy was applied on my machine or not?
I mean, you can do that through Active Directory and check the applications that were probably pushed, or you can check their access as far as what permissions that they probably had.
Okay. Well, so that was sending me into two questions then. What access is needed? That's actually a good point. So what access is needed? If we set that up on AD, if I'm the first user that calls in and says, oh, crap, I don't have access to my application, you know that's being pushed by group policy. You said, okay, well, since you're the first person, let's make sure that permissions are fine on AD for the group policy objects.
Right.
What permissions are needed for me to get that application or to have that? I'm sorry. What group policy permissions are needed for me to be able to apply that group policy to my machine or my user account? What do you need to make sure it's set up? There's only two of them.
Yeah, you need to make sure it's set up because they may be a power user to add an application or install an application, or they may be part of a group that, you know, another group may have to be added to them, or they may have to be part of another group.
Right. So what permission? So let's just say Michael is the architect, and he's designed mm-hmm. that, but I'm the first user that calls in, and you look there and you say, well, Eddie's a member of that group, but Michael, I need to go back and double check you since you architected this and make sure that they have permissions. It's pretty quick to do it, but what permissions does that group need? And if you don't know it, that's okay. I'm just, again, this is more of a gauging and an assessment than anything else.
Okay. He would have to be a administrator of that or the owner of that particular.
Nope, not for group policy. So for group policy, if I'm a member of a group called Group Policy X, Group Policy X is assigned permissions to a group policy called X, if you will, and that group needs to have only two permissions for me to work. Matter of fact, any more permissions, then it's a bad thing. Any less, then it's a bad thing. So I need to have read and apply permissions. That's it. So whatever group
right,
I'm a member of needs to have read and apply. Read,
right.
I got to be able to read it first and then apply it second. Any more than that, and it can actually become catastrophic, and any less than that, I won't be able to get it. All right, so on group policy, some of the things, I'll tell you a little bit here in just a second about the project, so you can kind of get a better understanding of what's going on. So as I said, Arthur, we've got several different roles and positions that's available. And one of the things that we're looking for is just, you know, who can be beneficial and where can they be the most beneficial at. We're not looking for somebody who knows everything. We got four architects on the project. I'm one of them, and none of us know everything, not even close. So we will bounce things off each other to do peer checks to make sure that we're doing the right thing. We'll bounce things off of you guys who's there to kind of assist us to make sure that we're doing the right things. And sometimes it's not a bad thing to have have somebody who has a little bit more in-depth knowledge who can just say, hey, Eddie, did you think about this every now and then?
Wow.
So, and if not, that's okay too. So primarily what we're looking for is somebody who can work alongside one of the architects and assist in developing the processes. So the architect, will probably do 90% of that. I would say 90% of that workload and a couple of these roles, because there's going to be a total of 13 other roles that's going to be migration specialists. Their job is not necessarily to provide end-user support, but to provide help desk support. So the scenario that I gave you earlier is a very logical scenario, likely scenario. It's quite possible that a help desk calls you up. You'd be the first point of escalation from the help desk. So you'd be like a tier two help desk.
Okay.
And you'd say, yeah, well, I understand how the migrations work because I helped the architects write the process. I understand that that's a group policy. So you got to use a little bit of troubleshooting skills and says, well, if Michael or Eddie calls in and they're the very first people who did not get access to this group policy, then I'm going to check permissions. However, if you're halfway through the migration process and most people have gotten this application, then you know it's not a permissions issue so long as they're a member of Group X. You know that's right. So then you start troubleshooting the workstation side. A couple things that you can use there is the GP result utility. Have you ever used that?
GP result?
Yeah. And again, if not, that's okay. We're gonna have some time on the ground to make sure that everybody's kind of up to speed on some of these things. So GP result is kind of a built-in utility once you join the domain, and you can actually run it on the workstation, or you can run it remotely, providing that you have access. You do need administrator access to run it remotely, and you need to make sure that you're not locked down through another group policy that prevents remote access sharing. But whenever you run it, it'll actually spit out, and there's a couple of different switches and commands that you can run inside it. For the most part, what it does is it tells you, in a very simplistic terms, what group policies have been applied to both the user account or an object account. So there are quite a bit of group policies here. We're trying to redesign the group policy. And I'm only harping on that now, and Michael's been on several of these with me, and this is probably the first time, maybe even the second, that I've even mentioned group policies. I only mentioned it because you did. So there's a good chance there's going to be quite a bit of group policies in play here too.
Okay.
But in addition to that, there's going to be other things too, which is, I can't log on to my workstation, you know, why not? Or all my drive mappings are gone, you know, what can happen? So it's not so much that you're supporting the end user, but you're supporting the help desk. But primarily your job would be to, at migration night, me or one of the other architects would kick off the migrations. We'll have connection issues to machines. We'll have problems with user objects, and we'll ask you guys to assist us in mitigating some of the issues that we're seeing. So you'll actually be working alongside the architects. We'll normally have a team of I'm not sure what we're going to end up having, but normally when I do these, I like to have a team of about four people assisting the architect.
Okay.
And what that does is allows the architect to focus on actually performing the migration. I will probably be doing that. I got a bunch of scripts that I write that will actually spit out exactly what I think is wrong, and along with the troubleshooting stuff. And once you do it once or twice, it becomes ingrained into you. Oftentimes, projects like these, Arthur, you tend to see the same problems over and over again across different sites or within a particular site. So once you see it once or twice, once you spend one night of pulling your hair out and ramming your head into a brick wall, you know, because you're so frustrated, all of a sudden, you know, it all becomes clear, and you realize that these are the same types of problems that you're going to see night after night after night after night.
Right. Okay.
So, again, primary duties is to work alongside the architect when the architect's actually doing migrations. A couple of the people will be selected to actually begin performing some of the migrations if time permits and if we find that skill, you know, that somebody has the necessary skill set or the capacity, or more importantly, the experience running some of the migrations. We've got a couple of people that do have some experience doing it. Secondary role is the day after support. That's to kind of be there and to calm the help desk down and to troubleshoot issues that the help desk can't do should they have a flood of calls. But, of course, if we do our job right, they won't have a flood of calls. So in a nutshell, that's kind of what we're looking for. So it's fast-paced. It's high-stress. It's a global company. So we'll be working 24/7. Well, not everyone working 24/7. Everybody will have days off. But once we get on the ground and we can assess everybody's abilities, one of the things that we're going to do is divide them up in types of shifts that's more appropriate for their workload and their experience and for what the customer needs. So it's we're doing an Active Directory force migration from one force to three, which adds a fairly large degree of complexity to the environment right there. In addition to that, alongside of that, it's a whole another work stream of doing an Exchange migration. So some of these guys that we're trying to hire right now will flip-flop between Active Directory and Exchange migration. We're using a tool set called Quest on both. But ultimately, our goal is to lock somebody down with a specific shift, with a specific architect to do specific job roles. Oftentimes, the first month or so of these projects, duties are kind of a little bit broader than what they should be, and then they begin to narrow down and become more focused and localized once you move forward. So initially is to help set up the documentation and processes, processes and procedures, assist in documenting those, and then assist the architects on migration nights. And then a tertiary duty would be to support the help desk on the day after migration. One person ordinarily, Arthur, is not going to do all of that. We'll divide those up into types of roles. Some people will be only assisting day after support. Some people will only be assisting for the architect. Does that make sense? You there?
Hello, Arthur. Arthur, can you hear us? If you can hear us, Arthur, we can't hear you. If your phone's not muted, you can drop the call and then dial back in, and then we'll hang here for a minute. Can you hear me, Eddie?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Couldn't have died. We would have heard him beep out.
Yeah, there may be a mute issue.
Arthur.
Is that noise, is that background noise on your end, Eddie?
Yeah. Here, let me mute my phone. Wait a minute. I'm muting now.
All right, Arthur, we can't hear you. If you can hear us, you may need to drop the call and dial back in. We'll wait here for just a minute, and barring that, I'll probably call you back on a separate line here.
Arthur, if you can still hear us, push a button on your keypad.
What I can do, Eddie, is I can hold this call if you want to hang tight, and I can switch over real quick and dial them up.
Yeah, do that.
See if I can hold them. Okay, hold here.
Yeah, I'm good.
This is Arthur Murray.
Hey, Arthur, how are you? Can you hear me okay? Arthur? Hello? Arthur, can you hear me? Arthur, can you hear me?
Okay. All right, Eddie, are you here?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay,
Arthur.
I brought Arthur back in with me. So you can pick up wherever you left off, Arthur. Just let Eddie know what the last thing you heard was.
Okay. That's funny. I heard you pop back in, Arthur, when Michael was trying to call you back.
Oh, you did?
I can hear you guys a whole lot better now, too. Really?
Yeah, it might be me.
I just moved out to maybe a quieter area.
Okay.
It's about lunchtime here, so everybody was walking by making a lot of noise here a second ago. So, what was the last thing you heard?
The last thing was you had mentioned that you were telling me about the process and procedures and about the different roles, and
okay. That's
where it kind of dropped off.
Mm-hmm. Ah, okay. Yeah, so and I won't repeat everything then. I'll just kind of pick it up from there. So the primary duties that we're looking for right now is somebody who can do one or all of the next things, which is one is work alongside the architect to assist in developing the process and procedures and to document those, to put them down on paper. And there's a lot of different things there. We're very documentation heavy when it comes to a lot of things because whenever we leave a client site, you know, we might do a fantastic job while we're there. But whenever we leave, the only thing we have to leave behind is documentation. Oftentimes, the architect will normally take the final responsibility of that. But in order to sometimes just to capture those ideas and throw them on paper, you know, we'll rely on somebody like you guys coming in to at least capture those thoughts, organize them, and put them into, you know, a workable format. And then we'll come back and we'll pretty them up and put some other technical details surrounding it. So we're not looking for somebody who knows everything. Number two is we need somebody who can actually work alongside the architect to assist in nightly migrations or daily migrations where it might be. Okay. Keep in mind, this is a global company, so we'll have some migrations during the day that's affecting China or Europe. Meanwhile, we have migrations at night that's affecting the U.S. So we're going to have like three different shifts of people. At least that's the theory right now. It's always subject to change. But right now, we're contemplating three different shifts of people. Some will be working at night to support remote migrations. Some will be working during the day to support localized migrations. And in any case, in any capacity, the major things that I like to say on this project or projects like these is that you can fully anticipate that it's going to be very, very, very fast-paced, very fast-paced. If you don't understand something, grab somebody and let them know. If you're working alongside me, I try to be very clear. But sometimes communications fail. But we try to be very clear. We want to make sure that everybody's on board. It's in our best interest to set you up for success and not for failure. You know, we're not looking for scapegoats or anything else. We need a good, solid, unified team that can work together and not get frustrated. You know, so many times you go into places and everybody's so damn busy pointing the finger in every other direction but themselves. I mean, we expect somebody to take ownership, including us, you know, take ownership and have integrity and be able to work alongside team, move at breakneck speeds while learning as you go. It should be a very good learning opportunity for a lot of people, including us. Even though I've done a lot of these projects, every single one, I never walk away from one of these projects without learning a good deal of detail. So I know if I can learn from these things, anyone can.
Yes, exactly.
So those are the things that we're looking for. We're planning on having an orientation, an off-site orientation to kind of unify everyone to make sure that everybody understands the basic roles and responsibilities of the job and what they should and shouldn't know. Okay. And we'll probably give a quick – I don't want to use the word tutorial. That sounds almost grade school, but we'll give a quick overview of some of the things that we expect to see. Keep in mind that we've not performed the migration here, so you know everything we say might be wrong. But there are handfuls of things that we see every single migration. I don't care where we are, you know. So it's those types of things that we'll probably try to cover up front. We've got some people that we're bringing on board that has a vast amount of migration experience. We got some that doesn't have, you know, so much migration experience. So we're trying to find the best role or the best position that suits each individual the best. We've got about another 9 or 10 people to interview, and we're going to file a list and get it back to Michael fairly quickly, hopefully by today's Monday, hopefully by Wednesday. Right now, the proposed start time is either next Monday or the following Monday. We're still trying to clarify that with the client to make sure that, you know, we've got the right location and the right start time, and that they're okay with our projections of resources needed on the ground.
If I can cut in briefly, I don't know that you've covered the recent shift in the start point.
I have not. That was next. So go ahead, Michael.
No, I believe when we last talked, Arthur, the proposed site to kick this off at was in Fort Wayne, Indiana. As of Friday afternoon, I received word from Eddie and the other guys that the client moved that initial site to Hanover, Maryland. So that's going to be the start point on it.
Okay.
Yeah, which is really bad for us because all of the architects are within driving range of Fort Wayne, Indiana. We'd prefer to be sitting in a car than an airplane seat. So that's bad news for us.
Right.
So if when we get down to this, would that be an issue for you to be out at Hanover, Maryland instead of you're in Nashville, so it's probably doesn't matter one way or the other to you. Away from home is away from home.
Yeah, it's not a problem. I mean, I'm used to that, you know. So
okay, the time frame here is the federal government has mandated that this company divests by October 1. So we can't wait till, you know, the night before to make that happen. So our deadline from the customer is July or August 1, actually. I know we have a little bit of fudge room in there, but not a lot. And we might be able to slide into a week or so on that. And we're hoping that we can get about 95% complete by there. And if not, once we get everybody on the ground, maybe we can identify some issues as to why that's not a possibility or what we'll need to do. So I fully anticipate this to be a very, very, very high-paced or you know, very, very fast-paced and high-stress project. Several of us like to have a beer or 4 or 10 after work. So, you know, there's ways to let your hair down one way or the other. Hopefully you're not a 40-hour work week guy wanting to punch a clock and get out of there. Especially since you'd be getting paid for every hour you work anyway, so.
Right.
Okay.
With the
I hear
you. Day, that's a good thing.
Yeah, you got that right. So there are some constraints on the budget, but not a lot, and we'll cover some of those. Most of those constraints tend to be around travel. Now, of course, we can't have somebody just sitting by billing just for the hell of it and not doing anything. So long as you're productive, you most likely will not be told not to bill. You know, but I can tell you from experience how these projects go, the further on that you get into the project, the tighter the customer becomes with the budget. So I don't want to waste a whole hell of a lot of hours up front with people sitting around doing nothing. My guess is this, we'll probably start with as close to 40 up front, knowing that when we hit migration night, that we're really going to blow the doors out of that. So, and this is an experienced guess here, and don't take this to the bank, but this is an experienced guess. I would say, you know, bank on 40 hours a week in the first several weeks is going to be fairly easy for you guys. It'd be a lot of absorption, but fairly easy. Your real workload will begin about 3.5-4 weeks into it, whenever we actually start doing everything that we've prepped and planned for. Once you start doing the migrations, working 60 hours a week is not going to be uncommon. And knowing that dichotomy of the fact that when we get into crunch time at the migration window is when we need an influx of people and hours, we know that, but the customer sees, hey, we're halfway through the project, now what the hell is happening? We want to pull back on budget. Always happens.
Right.
Always happens. That's for us to fight. We'll fight that battle. Because at the end of the day, we need you guys for us to be successful and vice versa. We need for you to be successful.
Right.
So that's my gut feeling. That's my experience talking here. I've not been on site with the client yet. My counterpart has. I have not. So I can't really speak to exactly where they're at as far as their mindset. But we've already got some people on the ground that's beginning the exchange migration portion of this.
Okay.
So in a nutshell, that's it. If you're prepared to work a lot, You know, not saying you will, but if you're prepared to, and the possibility of working, let's just throw the worst-case scenario out there. You're working 60 hours a week on midnight shifts. That's the absolutely worst-case scenario. Yeah, would you be okay with that?
That'll be fine with me. I mean,
okay.
When I'm doing this type of work, to me, it's really not work. It's just something I get paid to do something that I love. So, I mean, it's like, you know, and I mean,
okay.
That's never a problem for me.
I hear you.
I mean, you know,
the
different things, I mean, it's different, you know, things that come up and the different challenges. I mean, that's what I like, and, you know, to learn from it and to move, and I mean, that's just what I love to do. So.
Well, and that's good, then. So, and that's kind of what we're looking for is kind of a can-do attitude. I can tell you this, we'll have four architects on the project, and almost always there's a little bit of animosity every now and then whenever you have three or four big wigs bouncing around. But for the most part, that will iron itself out. The good news is at least three of the architects have worked hand-in-hand together a lot of times, and the two head architects, me and another guy, have worked together a lot. So you'll hear and see some bickering. You'll see some confusion here or there, but you see it on every project. It's going to happen. At the end of the day, what we look for is providing a good quality product for the customer.
Okay.
All right. Well, do you have any questions for us?
My initial question was when you just answered about particular location on where the start point was, and if it's moved to Hanover, Maryland, that was going to be my next question.
Okay. Yeah, so it's been moved there. We just got final confirmation on that ourselves late Friday afternoon. So while that's a bad thing for us because all of us guys could drive there. You know, now would you – actually, you could probably drive there too. You're in Nashville. It wouldn't be that bad for a drive to Fort Wayne.
Yeah, Fort Wayne wasn't that bad. I mean, that's, you know, a few hours down the road, but –
Yeah, so the customer will reimburse for plane trip tickets. Obviously, you know, it's coach only. You can't fly first class. You know, basically be a good steward of their money because they at the end of the day they have the right to refuse anything. So you don't want to just go out and buy something and say what the hell I'm going to expense this because the odds are they're going to say no.
Exactly.
You know. So the hotels in Maryland is really close to Baltimore Airport. So we would probably just catch a cab over there. And since we'll be working most of the time, we'll probably just get one or two cars and we'll just carpool.
Okay.
You know, just anything to save a few dollars outside of rooming up together. We're not going to do that. There are some people that's actually going to drive in and they're going to get a hotel room for an extended period of time just because there's some of these people that say, hey, you know what, I do this a lot. I prefer just to go there and kind of stay at least for, you know, go home one time during the project and just stay there even on the weekends most of the time. So if you choose to do that, that's fine,
Eddie,
too.
I think, Eddie, we got one driving in from Los Angeles area.
Exactly, yeah, one's driving in from California all the way over to Maryland, and another one's from Arizona. Yeah, and the reason for that is they said, well, you know, if I'm there, I'm there. I might as well stay close by in case I'm needed.
Right.
And in that case there, if the weekend nights of the hotel cost the same or less than what an airplane ticket would each week, then so be it. They'll probably cover that with absolutely no problem.
Okay.
We're just trying to keep everybody's weekly expenses to not go above $1,000.
Right.
And right now, my counterpart has been on the ground in Maryland and in Fort Wayne. They're averaging about $700. That includes getting there and doing whatever they need to do during the week. So we should be good.
Okay.
All right. Well, that sounds good. We'll have a final decision back to Michael, probably hopefully by Wednesday or so. And the decision is going to be who and hopefully when. So right now there's two potential start dates. One is next Monday, the 2nd. And then is that right? The 2nd? I think so. And
yeah,
then
the 2nd
following Monday
is the tentative.
Yeah, the 2nd and or the 9th. We're not really sure yet. We're trying to get final confirmation, hopefully today, from the client.
Okay.
All right. That's all I've got, Arthur. I appreciate your time.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your time, too, Eddie. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
And if you need anything else, Arthur, just give me a shout. And I appreciate your time as well, and I'll talk to you guys later.
All right,
okay.
Michael. Thank you.
All righty. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you again, Arthur. Bye.